Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us as we roll through this Wednesday together. Steve Jones, Kevin Herr, we're at the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury.
It's Sarah.
Oh, so, yep, what, Kevin quit?
Kevin just walked out, so.
Can you blame him?
Well, yeah, I know. It's a nice day. It's kind of sunny. He was drawn to the outside. I think I'm filling in today and possibly tomorrow, but I will let you know.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah,
good
absolutely.
To have you on board. Excuse me. We'll have Pete Jensen from NHL.com to talk about the Stanley Cup Final tomorrow. Dick Girardi on Friday to talk about the Belmont Stakes. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report on Friday as well. And so that's the way I have guest-wise coming up. Looking forward to that very, very much. So we're gonna talk to them as well. Walt Moody, Center Daily Times, scheduled for the next half hour. We'll talk a little bit about some PIAA softball going on. Certainly some outstanding teams in Central Pennsylvania, which is amazing. The number of state championships that have been won by teams in our area. And we'll be talking to him about that in the next half hour. Looking forward to that. Also, at 800-795-9565, we started this conversation yesterday about Jimmy Rollins and Mike Schmidt saying, look, he's at least Hall of Fame consideration. In other words, you know, you sit down in a room and you can talk about a name and banding it about. Now, I've said that when you look at Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley as examples, they give me the Alan Trammell, Lou Whitaker feeling of two guys who played for the Detroit Tigers for a long period of time in their career, were great contributors to the Tigers, really good players. And when you're really good, the question is, are you Hall of Fame worthy? And they're two good examples of two really good ball players. A lot of teams would love to have Lou Whitaker, Alan Trammell. But neither one of them, I don't think, is going to make it to the Hall of Fame. Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley give me that same feeling. Now, you may have a different opinion at 800-795-9565. 800-795-9565. And Dick from Milton yesterday, when he called, said, look, he sensed there's more of a New York-Boston bias because of the amount of national exposure they get. And I could see his point, but at the same time, I also think that we see, all of us collectively, more players than ever before. The All-Star balloting, which I put little stock in, but I'm going to use that as an example now. Who's the leading vote-getter at third base in the American League right now? It's Josh Donaldson of the Oakland A's. Now, Josh Donaldson, I pointed out last year, I thought should have been in the All-Star game anyway, that of all the A's players, he's the guy that I look at and say, you know, that guy should have been in the All-Star game, but was not. Well, this year, he's the leading vote-getter at third, as of right now. And that can change between now and when voting closes in July. But at least it shows a savvy on the part of some of the fans that they're looking at a guy realistically. And it's not, for example, you don't see Will Middlebrooks of the Red Sox out there in front because he didn't deserve to be. I mean, there are guys that I think you just by the eye test, and I'm not, Stats can help, I think, break ties on certain things where you can kind of sit back and look at a stat number and go, you know what, okay, more hits, more homers, more doubles, whatever. But there's an eyeball test that goes with it. Ozzie Smith makes the Hall of Fame. Okay, did Ozzie Smith have Hall of Fame offensive numbers? No, he had really good numbers, especially later in his career. But when he was with San Diego in his early years in St. Louis, he was not a great hitter. Down the road, he became a really good hitter, really good. But in the field, the range, the number of runs he prevented, the number of plays that he made that an ordinary shortstop could not make. A ball that might be a base hit that drives in a run for one team ends up being a ground out to short in the hole to Ozzie Smith and a run being prevented. Eyeball test to me means a lot. You can look at guys and you can say, Hall of Fame worthy, really good, okay. And I think when I look at Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley, I see really good. I don't see Hall of Fame. Now, when I look at Roy Halladay, when he pitched for the Phillies and also what he did with Toronto, I have a different take on him. I look at a guy that's going to get, to me, serious consideration down the road when they take a look at one of the best pitchers in a certain era. He's going to get a lot of conversation as far as I'm concerned, and justifiably so. What he did all those years with Toronto, and then how he backed it up with his initial years with the Philadelphia Phillies. So there's a different distinction between, to me, looking at a Halladay and Roy Halladay. You know, you're talking about every fifth day. Cole Hamels has to go a long way in his career before he gets to that point. Cliff Lee's another guy, will never get in, really good, but the career not good enough to kind of climb over the top. Baseball, of course, is a sport of numbers. Now, Kevin knows how uncomfortable I get with the WAR number. That's wins above replacement. That is about as big a get. I can tell you right now, all right, okay, without really, okay, that if Mike Trout were to get hurt, the Angels would be affected. I don't need the WAR number to tell me that. Hey, if Dustin Pedroia gets hurt, the Red Sox will be hurt. I don't need a number to tell me that. Don't need that. If Adam Jones gets hurt, the Orioles are going to be hurt. So yeah, I brought it back to you, Sarah.
I appreciate that.
I mean, getting Manny Machado back's a big deal.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a big... you're talking, and not just at the plate, but also in the field, because Manny Machado last year was not just the Gold Glover at third base, he won the American League Platinum Glove as the top fielder in the American League. He and Simmons from the Braves were the two Platinum Glove winners last year. So you can see with certain guys that if Freddie Freeman's out of the Braves lineup, well, gee, you know, I think wins above replacement. I mean, first of all, it's a team game. I mean, somebody else will have to compensate for you not being there. So that's why the wins above replacement thing is just a bogus number. It's a make-believe fantasy number. Now, this the sabermetrics thing, there's certain things in sabermetrics that, you know, you can pick on anything you like. Well, the one thing I like is it puts a heavy emphasis on on-base percentage. And when you start using sabermetrics to start determining who should be in the Hall of Fame or not, it's like, oh, like you're not smart enough to look at a guy and know? These voters, for example, which are spread across the country, they are not just concentrated in New York and Boston. They are spread across the country. They have the savvy and the know-how to look at somebody and say, you know what, Hall of Fame worthy. Now, of course, you also have some people, for example, in years gone by, you say, why has there never been a unanimous Hall of Fame pick? Because you have some people that say that nobody should be a first ballot pick. Well, that's an absurd thing as well. You're telling me Hank Aaron and Willie Mays are not unanimous picks? Ted Williams, Joe DiMaggio? I mean, come on. That's absurd. We'll talk about those absurdities a little bit later. But I think when you look at today's players or recently retired players, Derek Jeter is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Mariano Rivera is a first ballot Hall of Famer. But Mariano Rivera is not going to be unanimous because there's going to be pushback from some voters who say a relief pitcher who just pitches one inning a game, and Rivera, you and I both know, did a little bit more than that in some games. Sometimes he'd have to get four or five outs. But for the most part, he'd have to get three outs. You're going to get blowback from some people, not many, but some, that say that, no, not in the first ballot. Now, he'll end up on the first ballot getting up at 90% of the vote. Derek Jeter is going to be an easy first ballot Hall of Famer. There's certain people that you look at and say, yeah, that guy is. But there isn't a complete New York bias in that I pointed out, look at Don Mattingly, who had himself a really good career. He's not even remotely close to getting in. You know, mention the Red Sox. Dwight Evans. Dwight Evans had himself a really good career. Power. Great arm in the outfield. Didn't want to run on him. Outfield assists. I mean, I'm talking powerful, accurate arm. But he's not going to make the Hall of Fame. And it's not that he's not really good, because he was really good. Fred Lynn had himself a really, really good career. Fred Lynn's not going to make the Hall of Fame. Don Baylor's not in the Hall of Fame. Bobby Grich was a really good player. He's not in the Hall of Fame. And you can go on and on and on with the list of players that were really good in their careers. Now, a test, for example, Todd Helton of the Colorado Rockies. Now, I think he's a Hall of Fame player. He just retired last year. He deserves serious consideration for being in the Hall of Fame. Now, that's going to test whether the Colorado Rockies have enough across the board for a guy like Helton, because he doesn't have a lot of postseason experience or anything like that, because the Rockies have made one World Series and only been in the playoffs a few times in their existence, which now is spanning 20 years now, almost 20 years. But you have guys that are really good players. Bobby Bonilla was a really good player. He's not going to get close. That's why you talk about Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins, two really good players. And Kevin says, well, he only made the All-Star game three times. That's another one of those things that becomes irrelevant to the body of work. I mean, what does that mean? You made the All-Star game three times. What, instead of nine? What does it matter? A lot of that's a popularity contest anyway, in terms of getting voted in, and sometimes it's a numbers thing in terms of you have to get, you know what the circumstances are.
That's what I'm interested in, is the people that are voting, the percentage of people that look at the numbers, the percentage of people that say, I just know this guy's good. It's just an interesting mix.
I think if you're really good at it, you can see by the eyeball test. And then there's some people in the really good category that you need to take a long look at their numbers as compared to what all current Hall of Famers are, Sarah. I think that's where numbers come in. The guys that are in the really good category, do they have something numerically that crosses them into over that line to Hall of Fame? I think that's where the numbers come in. I think there's certain people that it's obvious on the eyeball test where you look at them and go, yep, Hall of Famer. I think that does come into play. Mike Messina is one of those guys. From our area. Do I think Mike Messina was a Hall of Fame pitcher? In fact, I do. I think Mike Messina should be voted into. If I had a vote for the Baseball Hall of Fame, I would vote for Mike Messina, because you know what? Every time he went out to pitch, I felt like, whether it was with the Orioles or the Yankees, you felt like you were facing an ace. There's something to that. Take, for example, John Lackey. John Lackey's really, really good. John Lackey's also pitched really well in big games, but John Lackey's not going to go to the Hall of Fame. All right? If you said, I it's a key game here, who do I hand the ball to? I'd give the ball to Mike Messina. Now, that's a statement, just like I would give the ball to Curt Schilling. I mean, he's 11-2 lifetime in the postseason. money on the table means something. Welcome. Great to have you with us. Sarah Bartlett here today.
Glad to be here.
Great to have you here. Kevin taking care of a couple of personal items that he needs to take care of. Very important, by the way. So, Kevin out today, and Sarah's here. And, look, it's we talked about the Hall of Fame. I want to get your input at 800-795-9565. I'm sitting here in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. I want to take a few moments to bring in Walt Moody from the Sunday Daily Times. The PIAA playoffs are going on in softball right now. And, you know, there's been an interesting phenomenon. Now, I know this does not directly go to the Valley. I mean, I understand that, but it does to Central Pennsylvania. You'd be shocked if you looked to see over the last 10 years the number of center county teams that have ended up being state champions in softball. I mean, I'm talking stunning. State College has done it. Belfont's done it. Baldy Glory has done it. Phillipsburg Osceola has done it. Penns Valley's done it. All five schools in Center County have won at one point or another, regardless, you know, in a different division, a state championship in the sport. It really is, for an area this size, it's unbelievable. And somebody that's covered this repeatedly is the sports editor of the Center Daily Times, Walt Moody. Walt, welcome. It's great to have you back.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Good to be with you.
This time of the year, softball, and we've talked about this before, how amazing is it to you that for whatever reason this sport in this area is this good?
It really is amazing, Steve. Especially these two programs that are still alive right now for us, Bald Eagle area and Phillipsburg Osceola, they've got four state titles between them in the last decade, and they've been at seven state title games. It really is amazing. The kids around here are just, they're fantastic at this sport. And maybe even more of an amazing thing, somehow they get the fans have gotten, they're just so pumped up for these things. They're showing up in droves for these games. If who knows where they're going to be able, if Bald Eagle and PO win tomorrow in the state quarters, they'll play each other again for the fourth time this year. And who knows where they're going to have to find a place to have that game. Because literally there could be 1,500 to 2,000 people show up or even more.
And that's amazing. Now, this is not the only area that emphasizes it. There are other schools across the state that emphasize this. When you've talked to the coaches, when do they start encouraging younger people around here to start getting interested, and what's the path?
I know, for example, over in Phillipsburg, they have a Junior Olympic program that they start very early on. There's also summer teams. The Bald Eagle area has a good youth program, and that's where it gets started. And the coaches have some influence over the younger programs and the junior high schools, and that it's amazing. You know, and the funny thing is that, you know, a program like Phillipsburg Osceola this year did not have a junior varsity team. There weren't enough kids there, but they've got enough kids in the program to be one of the top eight teams in the state again this year. They made the semifinals last year. It really is amazing. And the kids are just, they're tough kids. They know the game well. And I guess it's from coming along and playing that. A lot of kids even play Little League. So it's really a tremendous, and I think the tradition breeds it. A player for Bald Eagle has shortstop Haley Giedrock. Her sister Whitney played on a gold medal winning team at Bald Eagle. Her sister Kendra played on a gold medal winning team at Bald Eagle. And actually her mother played on a gold medal winning team at State High way back when. So, I think it's just also bred within some of the families in the area.
For the two programs we're talking about, Phillipsburg and Bald Eagle, how good are the pitchers?
Actually, this year it's not a big pitch.
Really?
It hasn't been pitching. It's really been, there's some hitting involved. the Bald Eagle team, I've heard somebody affectionately refer to them as cockroaches because they, nobody can seem to kill them right now.
Right.
Bald Eagle's been down with two runs down in the district quarterfinals going into their last at-bat, tied it and won it in the eighth. They were down to 4-0 in Phillipsburg in the district title game, which they came back and won in the eighth, and then they were down to their last out in the PIAA first round and tied it and won it in the eighth. So they're just really gritty teams. Phillipsburg in their first round PIAA game scored 16 runs, one inning. So they're getting it done in different ways. The pitching hasn't been as super. Bald Eagle got a great effort the other night from McKenna Dyke in their win over St. LaSalle. But there hasn't been that, you know, the super dominant arm that's going to strike out 15 kids in a ball game like we've seen in the past around here. They're just on very fundamentally sound teams, and they come up with clutch hits when they need them.
For you covering it, when did you start to cover it and say to yourself, you know what, I'm actually watching something that's really interesting and really special? When did that start to kick into you as you've covered it? Because you've done this for a long time.
Yeah, the first year I covered high school softball here for the Center Daily Times, we had Penns Valley won a state championship. Belfont made it to the state finals, and State College got eliminated in the state semis. So I looked at it, and I was amazed that there were that many good softball players from one small area in the state that you could do that with. And it just seems like as they've gone along, the passion of the fans certainly get into you. I mean, it's still nothing to when two county teams here play each other to see 400 or 500 people show up for just a regular season game, and you just you found out that it was just some reason it's special. I heard from some folks that are going over to the games now that have never gone to a girls' high school sport in their lives, but somehow they're interested in it. There's somebody else has got them interested in it, and now they're fans. So it's really a unique sport in this area.
When you talk to other reporters from other parts of the state, what do they tell you?
I'm sure that when they show up and see 15, you know, between 1,000 and 1,500 people here, they're stunned to see that many people showing up for a ball game. It is a little different other places. There are some traditions around the state, but it's just they're not used to seeing anything like this, like it's around here. And it's very unique and very neat to be a part of. I tell you, the fans are just so passionate. The game between Bald Eagle and Phillipsburg, Osceola, and the district championship game, just the banter back and forth between the fans and everything else, it's definitely something you'd expect to see in other sports in high school, but you wouldn't think it would be softball. But these are as passionate fans as I've ever seen in any sport in high school.
Women's basketball has not had a lot of turnover over time. I mean, Rini was here for a long time, kept her staff together for the most part. Coquise has been here for the most part. She's kept her staff together. Now there's some turnover in the staff. But what about the recruiting part of it? It seems like their recruiting continues to be as strong as ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Their new full commitment, Amari Carter, is... I've been covering the team since Kelly Mazzani was a freshman, and this is the highest-rated player that they've ever had come into the program during my tenure covering the team. Even Maggie Lucas and Tanisha Wright and all the others like that, none of them were top 10 graded players. So that's a big get for this program. And Coquise and Gia Damon, who's been with her from the beginning, they seem to really get this recruiting thing, and they get these outstanding players to buy into what the vision that she has for both the program and for them as players. And you know, the oral commitment they got from Carter, she's a guard, obviously. Fred Schmeel, who just left the program, was a big guard coach, but apparently that had no effect on her decision at all, that she still wants to come here and really believes in the program. I think she told me she had been here six different times for different be it camps or football games or official visits and everything else like that. So it shows that Coquise really is going to continue to be strong in all this recruiting.
We've talked about Maryland and Rutgers in a football sense. We've talked about Maryland and Rutgers in a men's basketball sense. In women's basketball, Vivian Stringer now brings Rutgers in. Maryland now comes in. What does that do to the Big Ten, in your opinion, plus and minus?
It's going to make it a much stronger league. Even though Penn State's the three-time conference champs, and granted they lost a lot from last year, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Maryland comes in as the conference favorite, having gone to the Final Four last year. Those two teams are just going to make it infinitely more difficult to win the conference. It's certainly going to bump the conference RPI, which is very important when it comes to NCAA selections. Going to be a lot more. It'll be interesting to see how competitive the recruiting is now on this side. I know they're competing, but now all these teams are together in the same league. It will really make a significant impact in women's basketball in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I know at Rutgers, I think they're pinning a lot on their women's basketball program to be the program that gives them the biggest impact in the Big Ten. That's the sense I get from them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it'll be interesting as with Coach Stringer, because she was at Iowa way back when, so it'll be interesting to see what she brings to the Big Ten. Certainly, she'll bring some very physical, hard defended games. It may look a little different than some of the other Big Ten games we've seen over the years.
Yeah, it's interesting, Walt, from coverage perspective. We've talked about Phillipsburg, Osceola, Bald Eagle, and it's so important for the local paper, or in our case, a local radio station, to make sure that the backyard is taken care of, because that's, you know, it's one thing. You and I could sit here and talk about the Spurs and the Heat, but there are national entities that are going to talk about that all the time. When you sit down to plot out what you want to do, how important is it in this that you're always talking about, okay, we've got to make sure the backyard is always taken care of because of?
Absolutely. I mean, it's no surprise that when James Franklin came in, he said he wanted to dominate the state, right? So you got to take care of what your readers want to read, and they do want to read about what's going on in Center County. I know when I talked to the guys that on the daily part of things, I said, one of my philosophies is, make sure the local copy gets in. If we have to cut the wire copy, then we cut the wire copy, because the local copy is the stuff that they're not going to get for the most part anywhere else. So that you have to take care of your readers at home, and that's the way we go about things. And you're right. There's so many other avenues, and quite frankly, with the internet now, you can find pretty much anything nationally you want. But you can't find out who won between Bald Eagle and Bellefonte that day.
Then there's the next part. As time has gone on, is it easier or more difficult to cultivate relationships with coaches, athletes, and so forth? Is it easier or more difficult now?
At the high school level, it's a lot easier to cultivate those relationships, I feel like. And then over, it takes maybe a little longer at the collegiate level to cultivate that. But, it is, and being around the athletes themselves really keeps, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and it really keeps me alive and keeps me young, and I hear things, see different things in some of these games that I've never seen before covering sports events. Saw a triple play in a softball game the other day. Never saw that happen before in softball live. I mean, it really is amazing. Keeps it fun for us that have been doing it for a long time.
Walt, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. Walt Moody, Saturday Daily Times. Triple play. Penn State pulled two triple plays in one game. That usually just means there's a lot of guys on base. Walt Moody, Saturday Daily Times. So if we got Pete Jensen tomorrow from NHL.com, we're going to discuss the Stanley Cup Final Game 1 tonight with the Rangers playing at the Staples Center against the Kings. Then we're going to have Dick Girardi to talk about the Belmont Stakes. He'll be joining us on the show Friday from... actually, he's going to be in Philadelphia at the time when we talk to him, because he's not going up till the day of to cover the event on Saturday. And we're also going to have Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, on as well. Mike Emmerich, by the way, will not be doing the Stanley Cup Final tonight. He's been a death in his family. So Kenny Albert is going to do the Stanley Cup Final Game 1 tonight. If anybody ought to be able to know what's going on, it's Kenny Albert. Here's the reason why. There were 13 games played in the conference finals. The Rangers played Montreal, and the Kings played Chicago. He's the only guy that did all 13 games. Why? Because he's the Rangers radio announcer. And then for NBC Sportsnet, he did the TV of the Kings and Blackhawks. So Kenny should have no problem doing tonight's game. He has now seen every player on each team for the last 2 weeks continuously. So, but he'll fill in tonight with Eddie Olczyk and Pierre McGuire. Pierre, by the way, is one of the five candidates for the Penguins GM job. Remember when we surprised the Penguins blogger with that 2 weeks ago? And what about Pierre McGuire? No, I haven't heard that. I said, well, we have. Well, it turns out Pierre is a candidate. He's one of the five candidates for it. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Care, Routes 11 and 15 at Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
There's no greater thrill that when this theme plays, to see Kevin dance to it in the studio.
It's an experience.
And I think that says it all, Sarah. I mean, Sarah, Sean, Cody, Drew, they've all seen it, and they've all really said it the same way. A deadpan, yes, it's quite an experience. Nothing like it. But yeah, Kevin is not here today. Taking care of family issues today, which is important. Yeah. Better not happen too many days. No, just kidding. just kidding. But because we know what comes first here, and we understand that completely. So he has to take care of that. And it's Sarah and me today. Our thanks to Walt Moody from the Saturday Daily Times for being on. Like to talk next half hour about your nominations on the Baseball Hall of Fame. You know, that from your eyeball test, who you happen to think is Hall of Fame worthy. is my eyeball test might be different than yours. I know Kevin is steadfast that he thinks Chase Utley is Hall of Fame worthy. Now, I say no, but that doesn't mean either one of us is right. Now, you may feel the same way he does. Who are a couple of guys that you look at in today's game and you say to yourself, you know what, that guy's a Hall of Famer? Like a Derek Jeter, obviously. To me, a guy, Dick yesterday mentioned Albert Pujols, obviously. A guy I mentioned was Yadier Molina, the catcher for the Cardinals. Fabulous defensive player, has really come into his own in the latter stages of his career offensively, a lot like Ozzie Smith at shortstop. To me, Molina is a Hall of Fame worthy player that I watch and say to yourself, you know what, that guy's really, really good. He's better than the really good player.